please our senses. We welcome that. This shows our weakness for absorption. We want an enthralling experience. And we're looking to the mature energy for that enthralling experience, that all-consuming experience. That's why conditioned souls are so attached to like, to the biological interactions between male and female, because those biological interactions seem to offer just an all-consuming paradise in which you can even think to lose yourself. Bhakti Yoga takes that hankering for absorption and applies it to Krishna's service where it belongs. Therefore, the Bhakti texts extol the glories of engagement in devotional service. And the Bhakti texts are always pushing aside material motivations because that gets in the way of the pure enthrallment and the pure reciprocation. So it's not that we are some kind of fanatics who just are trying to torture ourselves by ridding ourselves of traces of material contamination. Through Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that there's nothing innocent about material contamination. It's getting in the way. It's ruining our opportunity for perfect enthrallment, perfect absorption in service to Krishna. And this quest for perfect enthrallment keeps us motivated in bhakti. It keeps us going year after year. We have tasted an inner dynamic that the material energy can't offer. We have no doubts that there is the reality of bhakti rasa, the taste of loving devotional service to Krishna. And we want to feel what it's like to be a devotee. To feel what it's like to be a devotee means to live your life in relationship to Krishna as his servant. We want to feel it. What is that like? And then we know we're on the platform of reality. Otherwise, the emotional experiences of the illusory energy beckon to us and actually seize us. We're open for that. Without service to Krishna, we're wide open to material, emotional experiences because we want to feel. This may be embarrassing to admit, but we want to feel. We want to have fulfillment. Without Krishna's service at the core of our life, there's no doubt we'll be filled up by material experiences, material emotions, material hopes, certainly material lusts. This verse describes that the presence of shadows, echoes, and mirages indicate that there is something real. And because these shadows, echoes, and mirages are reflections of real things, they do seem to carry some meaning or comprehensible perception. In terms of the Upanishads, we would explain that because the unreal is coming from the real, therefore even the unreal has a trace of reality. Because the illusory energy is Krishna's illusory energy, coming from him, the supreme real. Therefore, in the illusory energy, you can find some semblance of meaning and comprehensible perception. It seems to almost make sense because it's coming from the supreme sense. It's coming from Krishna, therefore, there seems to be some enticing value in the material energy. But as you know, a reflection, an echo, a mirage, doesn't have the substance that you require. Sometimes devotees wonder, will there ever be any hope that I get over this contamination? And often we may forget that the illusory energy comes from Krishna. And if Krishna desires, he can turn off the switch. Remember Srila Prabhupada upon arriving on the boat to the USA. And he frankly admitted, how will these people ever become Krishna conscious? You see, the heart and the emotions and the intelligence of a soul totally dedicated to Krishna's pleasure. And he's wondering, how will these people ever become Krishna conscious? It looks impossible. So we're not the only ones to feel like that. But Srila Prabhupada says, I know that he expressed his conviction. I know that if they hear the sound vibration or Shiva Bhagavatam, all the pollutants in their heart will be cleansed. So on the one hand, he's expressing incredulousness. Look at the situation. He hadn't even got off the boat yet. Just look at the situation. How will these people ever make any advancement? At the same time, while expressing that hopelessness, he expresses complete confidence. Srinivasakatam Krishna Punyashra. I know that if that sound vibration enters their ear, they'll be cleansed. I know that. And then he further expressed his confidence in Krishna by saying, by your will they went into Maya, so by your will they can come out of Maya. You're the supreme magician. So I'm just placing myself before you as your insignificant bearer. You make me dance as you like. When we remember that Krishna comes from Krishna, we see the personalistic approach, which is to satisfy Krishna, and Krishna makes adjustments. The illusory energy is not operating separate from Krishna. Our very perception is 100% dependent on Krishna, as he says in Bhagavad Gita. From me comes all knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. As you know, if you want to revolt against Krishna, if you want to be an asura, you need Krishna's help. He has to help you to forget him. This is how helpless you are. You can't even get Krishna out of your hair, so to speak, unless he helps you. So if you want to revolt, if you want to separate yourself from Krishna, you have to depend on him. And of course, if you want to remember Krishna, we depend on him. He helps the devotees in forgetfulness also. He helps devotees to forget their material desires. You may wonder, how will I ever get certain kinks out of my system? How will I ever get over certain memories and experiences and contaminated longings? Krishna helps his devotees forget their material desires as they engage in devotional service. This is the miracle of bhakti. Our perceptions depend completely on Krishna. Even in a perfected stage of life, you see what Krishna wants you to see, what's best for his pleasure pastimes. Just like when in Mathura, Krishna was thinking, my devotees in Vrindavan, they're suffering so much in separation. Who can I send there that will pacify them? So he thought of Uddhava. Uddhava has done so many austerities, he's qualified to go to Braj. And secondly, he said, because of Uddhava's stature, because of Uddhava's reputation, when he comes back from Vrindavan to Mathura and tells the Mathura Vasis of the supremacy of Braj Bhakti. They'll believe him. Otherwise, if I send anyone else, the Maturavasis may not accept. Because the Maturavasis think that they love Krishna, their love of Krishna is the best, and especially Vasudeva and Devaki, the mother and father of Krishna, they are in the highest position. But when Uddhava comes back from Vrindavan to give a report and teach them the highest level of praying, they'll accept it because of his stature, because of his reputation. You may remember that when Krishna went to Kuja's house to fulfill his promise, he didn't go alone. Of course, Krishna's going to Kuja's house had nothing to do with any material program. But still, Krishna was conscious of how things might appear. It's part of his art. So he took Uddhava with him, thinking that, I'm going to Kuja's house, she's a well-known society girl, but when people hear that Uddhava's with me, they everything's all right. Everything is above board. So, Krishna is sending Uddhava to Vrindavan. And upon Uddhava's arrival, he saw the beauty of Vrindavan at sunset. The cows mooing, being milked, the bulls in heat, the homes decorated with sacrificial fires for Surya and the other demigods, the smell of incense everywhere, the sounds of the cowherd men giving orders for milking the cows or setting the cows loose or tying up the cows. Uddhava saw this inconceivably beautiful scene. But what was actually going on? Due to Krishna's Ichcha Shakti, Krishna's, his will, Yogamaya had covered the grievous suffering of Vrindavan, so Uddhava didn't see it upon arrival. Uddhava just saw such a beautiful scene, and he didn't see the devastation until he entered Nanda Maharaj's house. The Shri Chakravarti Thakur explains, it didn't hit him. He wasn't allowed to see. Krishna wanted him to see Vrindavan as it was when Krishna is there. So Uddhava got that experience. And the perception changed when he entered Nanda Maharaj's house. And then the devastation hit him. Nanda Maharaj was able to hold a conversation, get himself together to hold a conversation, simply because of Uddhava's stature, and he looked just like Krishna. Otherwise, Nanda Maharaj wouldn't have been able to rally himself. How was Nanda Maharaj able to offer Uddhava something to eat? Vishnacharya Thakur explains that actually all the kitchens in Vrindavan were dirty, unused, with weeds and spiders, because they considered that they were dead. Because Krishna's gone. They just considered, what's the point of eating? We're all dead. But to feed Uddhava, one Brahmana had some broken rice and he put it in some milk, and so Uddhava was able to eat something. So gradually, the perception of Uddhava changed, and he was able to see Vrindavan in his devastation. See, this is an example of how even in the most perfect stage, you're still dependent on Krishna. You see what he wants you to see for his pleasure. You're a cooperator in his pastimes, and that's much higher than being a know-it-all. Just like Prabhupada writes about Mother Yashoda in the 10th canto Bhagavatam, the Damodar Leela. Mother Yashoda did not care to know who Krishna was in terms of tattva. She did not care to understand how he's unlimited and all-pervading. She's just thinking, this is my son. I have to discipline him. He's so restless. He may run into the forest. So I have to buy him. Krishna himself, Sanatana Goswami points out in Brihadbhagavatamrita, that Krishna himself is subject to forgetfulness, overwhelmed by praying. He and the residents of Vrindavan forget that they have participated in the same pastime in Loka Vrindavan. They don't remember that again and again Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill. Again and again there's this pastime or that pastime because they're Nitya Leela. But each time the pastime is ever fresh. In material existence, who wants to watch a rerun movie? But Krishna's pastimes, the proof that Krishna's pastimes are so enthralling is that Krishna does basically the same thing over and over again. And each time, the Vrijvasis get 100% caught up in it, like it never happened before. When Krishna leaves Vrindavan for Mathura, somehow they arrange that. So, then he returns. There's only, Snana Goswami explains, there's only, at best, some tiny memory in the consciousness of the Lokavasis. Didn't something bad sort of happen in the past? I can't remember exactly what it was. Did Krishna leave? Just some, at best, a tiny wisp of a memory. But again, the pastime happens. And everyone is totally caught up in it. Well, this is how inconceivable Krishna is. The proof of the serious past. He doesn't have to come up with something new, so to speak. Because the perception of the Lokavasis is that each pastime, as it happens, it's new. It's there's no sense of, we've seen this before, therefore, how can we developed in this pastime. And Krishna himself would rather sometimes subordinate his omniscience to praying if that's the best thing for the pastime. The example of Krishna and the cowherd boys in the dealing with Agasura. The cowherd boys encountered Agasura with his bottom lip on the ground and his top lip way up in the clouds. And the cowherd boys were debating amongst themselves, what is this? Is this some kind of new amusement facility in Vrindavan? Other cowherd boys said, oh no, this is a dangerous snake. So they were going back and forth, bantering, what is it, what is it? Finally they concluded, well, even if it is a dangerous snake, Krishna's here, he'll protect us. So they marched right into the mouth of Agasura. Krishna was thinking, oh no, what to do? Temporarily, this appeared as a problem, a puzzle for Krishna. He was enjoying the nectar of puzzle solving. So how am I going to deal with this? I don't know what to do. This is a kind of enjoyment. That's why people, you see them, I see them on the airplane all the time. Crossword puzzles. Other people have Rubik's Cube or something like that. Just because they like the sensation of how to solve this, what to do. The Krishna's a supreme enjoyer. Sometimes he wants to taste the enjoyment. Taste the enjoyment of not knowing the solution temporarily. Oh. So he's thinking like that as the cowherd boys have entered the mouth. You see, if I kill a Agasura, but the cowherd boys are inside, they'll die. So, how do I manage this situation? Then a few minutes later, Krishna had the solution. Meanwhile, what is Agasura thinking? He has his own devious mentality. Everyone has entered my mouth except Krishna. Krishna killed my brother and sister. Yet a one-track mind. So, there are other examples of how Krishna will subordinate his omniscience to the dealings of praying to maximize his dwelling of theirs with his devotees. The devotees can forget, Krishna can forget by the arrangement of his own yoga mind. So even at the topmost level of existence in Goloka Vrindavan, the perceptions depend on the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We'll never be the omniscient to the extent that our knowledge is the ultimate reality. In bhakti, knowledge leads to devotion to Krishna. The residents of Vrindavan, they don't go around talking Krishna tattva. They're living the conclusion of knowledge. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, my guys just saw by a hundred all the Vedas I am to be known. So they have Krishna face to face. They have a conclusion in knowledge. In material existence, we've heard from today's verse that our perceptions of shadows, echoes, and mirages are only illusory reflections of real things. We're not seeing the whole situation. What we see depends on who we are. This is how subjective everything is. According to the level of your consciousness, you see certain things and you don't see certain things. In the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Chivada Bhavati Shrata Devi Devi Narodina. According to your relationship with the modes of material nature, you have certain types of conceptions. So even your belief system, your philosophical system, the assumptions that you base your life upon are generated by contact with the modes of material nature. So what you consider to be uniquely you, I mean, this is me, you know, this is just how I am. Do you understand? you're just talking about something generated by contact with the modes of material nature. You're talking about an echo, a shadow, a mirage, generated by karna, guna, sandhasa, contact with material nature. Because the illusion comes from Krishna, if we satisfy Krishna, as he says, again, it's my materiality, mama maya, and mameva ye prabhajante maya. If you somehow personally do something about your situation. On the way to Krishna turning off the illusory energy in your heart, he gives you a vision of all the monsters lurking in your heart. Out of compassion, I within your heart will dispel the darkness of illusion by turning on the torch of knowledge. So you can actually see what's going on in your interior. And seeing the enemy is half the way to victory. We should not be depressed and become immobilized. And Krishna mercifully lets us see the contaminations in our heart, which we had little awareness they were there before. Sometimes newcomers to bhakti, they think that ever since I started chanting Hare Krishna, I've become so turbulent. I just see these horrible things in me. I mean, I was a kind of an all right person before. And now all this stuff is stirred up inside me. I don't know if I can go on like this. I give the example. It's like someone who has an attic in their house and they haven't cleaned for decades. They go up maybe once a year to put a suitcase that they use to travel on Thanksgiving or something. They go up there once a year, and so everything kind of looks peaceful. Then one year, they decide to clean the attic, and they just wave a duster around. And the air is filled with dust, and they start choking. It's so dirty up here. But until you touched it with the duster or the dust cloth, everything looked peaceful and tidy and in order. So sometimes newcomers to Christian houses become a little disturbed that suddenly I'm seeing things in myself that I never saw before. Sometimes they even blame the Maha Mantra. I have to stop chanting because it's just really stirring things up too much. That, I mean, I was never this bad before. It is mercy when Krishna allows you to see the monsters in the lagoon. You didn't know they were there. You thought maybe you were a nice citizen or a nice alternative person. Living a nice Southern California life, you know, organic orange juice, organic marijuana, a pesticide-free life, illicit sex intoxication. So, it is Krishna's mercy. And he said, out of compassion, I'll do it. Well, we may take it as a disaster. Krishna, why are you doing this to me? But it's done out of compassion, because seeing the enemy is half the way to victory. We're not independent in our perceptions. We see what Krishna wants us to see, whether we're in the conditioned state or in the liberated state. This is what it means to be part and parcel of Krishna. We can never be independent in our perceptions. So a devotee is always praying, let me see what is best for Krishna's service. In Goloka Vrindavan, what's best for Krishna's service is that they don't see he's God. And Krishna doesn't want that. In Gaur Lila, Lord Chaitanya would rather his associates not see him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because it disturbs his mood as the devotee of Krishna feeling separation. So we want to cooperate with Krishna, even in terms of our perception, something that is we consider so near and dear to us. What I see is me. And I can only act according to how I see things. But how you see things depends on what Krishna lets you see. Dravida Prabhu asked me to tell a story from Iron Curtain days, underground preaching in communist countries, so to satisfy such a bhakti sage. I think I've told this story to Padre Narayan Prabhu at lunch in Mayapur, but he's the repository of so many stories that you might have forgotten. So.
I'm eager to hear.
This taught me in the most striking terms, much as it here again in the Holy Shop. So, I forget what year it was, sometime in the early 80s. I was in Warsaw, and I was totally hot. I mean, the KGB had put out notice. They were enraged why they can't catch someone who looks as obvious as me. Brown in the palest part of the world, Slavic countries, they're just enraged. There are various reasons why they didn't immediately, why they didn't catch me, because, you know, I had various identities. So, anyway, it was always a great thing if devotees could find a place where we could gather and talk about Krishna and have a kirtan, because most of the devotees were young, they didn't have their own places. They lived with their parents. Generally, in communist countries, you might live with your parents until you were 50 or 60. Like after a 30-year waiting list, the government gives you an apartment. Well, you grimace now, but according to the New York Times, 50% of college graduates in the USA these days will have to spend significant years living with their parents because they... the job situation is so tough, and they can't afford their own place. So, gradually the Brahmacharya Ashram won't look so bad. So, one devotee announced, We found the place. We found the place. This is Odie's. He lives with his mother, and she's gone away for the weekend. We can just, it's a big apartment, 3 bedrooms. We can just all pile in there, and we can talk about Krishna, and we can cook these, and we can have kirtan. Wow. Everyone was so excited. So we moved in for the weekend, and yes, it was an ecstatic event. And there's one thing that devotees happened not to mention to me. If they had told me, I would have never gone to the place. But anyway, so we're all in the living room. It's a big living room. There are about 20 devotees all in a circle. And I am also in the circle. And I remember speaking from Srimad Bhagavatam, it's on the second canto, and I was absorbed in, as much as I can be, in, you know, speaking what Shukadeva Goswami said. I remember I was enunciating that, you know, we all wanted to do Prabhupada, so we're, you know, the hand gestures. And then all of a sudden I hear the front door open. It's like a vestibule, so you don't see the door, but you can hear it open. And then the devotees conveniently forgot to tell me was that muscular lady. What the devotees conveniently forgot to tell me was that although the boy's mother was gone for the weekend, she was a ranking officer in the police.
Oh,
and so she walked in, and she looked like a stereotype communist party bureaucrat lady, just stocky, looked like a bear. So she walked in, and you would think she would just march into the living room and just go bananas. But she was so well trained, she was so well disciplined in a certain way. She walked into the room and focused her consciousness and her vision on each individual devotee. There's about 25 in the living room in a circle. And so she would walk up to each devotee. She was like 1 foot away from each devotee. Look into the eyes of the devotee, memorize the face, and then turn to the next devotee next to him, to the same thing. Snapshot his face, then to the next devotee. Just 1 foot away from their face. And she went around the whole circle like that, in such a disciplined, controlled manner. And so I'm thinking, what's going to happen when she gets to me? I don't look Slavic. I don't look Polish. I look like the person that they're looking for. So she's coming around gradually to where I'm seated. And then she gets to the person sitting right next to me. And it's, oh, here it comes. To this day, I marvel how controlled she was. She methodically, it shows you the value of discipline, methodically just looked at each person without kind of just splaying out her attention. She knew what she was doing. She was professional. So she's looking 1 foot away from the face of the person next to me, and then she comes in front of me. Oh, here it comes. This is it. And shocked. As she turned her eyesight onto my face from a distance of 1 foot away, I saw the light go out of her eyes.
Mm.
And so she's staring right at me from 1 foot away, and her eyes have become just like cold stones. And I'm thinking, Hare Krishna, and then she moved to the person beyond me, and I saw the light of perception come back to her eyes. And she kept on going on like that, and then she finally got to where her son was. He was the last person in the circle as she was going around. She took her son into another room and started beating him. You're having political meetings in my house. You're ruining my career. How could you do such a thing? So while she's beating him in the other room, you know, I kind of tiptoed out the front door. So then later that evening, we met devotees at a safe location. So then I understood Matasmriti again in the poem of Shah. I saw it right in front of my eyes, Krishna controlling her perception. Normally, if I would walk out on the streets at that time in communist countries, traffic would stop. Like, what is this? You know, what is he? Does he look African? Is he Moroccan? Is he Turkish? Maybe dark Italian? At that time, it used to go. It was like that. So I just stopped going out in the day and only go out at night. So that's how exotic a sight it would have been. But she's looking right at me, and she can't see. Because she's not the controller of her perception. So similarly, we are praying to Krishna that we will not see this world anymore as an opportunity for our enjoyment. Just like Krishna controlled this police lady's vision, similarly, he can control our vision. If we convince him, I don't want to see this world anymore as an article for my enjoyment. I want to see it as paraphernalia for your pleasure. And certainly Krishna will help us. We shouldn't think it's a hopeless quest. As if Krishna has given us all these miseries and made bhakti so hard, so it's so difficult to get out of the miseries. Remember Srila Prabhupada making a very subtle point elsewhere in the Bhagavatam that the purpose of material existence is not that Krishna wants to give you miseries, but he wants to teach you that the miseries are unnecessary. There's kind of a subtle difference. It's kind of amazing. It sounds a little like word jumbling to you. You have to think about it. Anyway, he doesn't want to give us miseries, even though the miseries are here, but what he wants to do is teach us that the miseries are unnecessary. Seems to be kind of a fine difference, yes? It's a learning experience for us to understand that it's all unnecessary. In that way, it's Krishna's mercy. Sometimes devotees become discouraged. How am I ever get out of this delusion? Sometimes we become embarrassed. Memories spring into our consciousness. Srila Prabhupada said a very interesting thing about the occurrence that you're chanting your japa, you're reading a Krishna book, and all of a sudden some unsavory memory of your past atrocities comes to your consciousness. And, oh my goodness, this is just, this is hopeless. Here I am chanting, here I am reading a Krishna book, and that stuff's coming to my mind. The explanation Srila Prabhupada gave was that the super soul is giving you a choice. Do you remember? This is what you did. Is that what you want, or do you want me? Because by giving you a choice and you choosing the you choosing Krishna, you become stronger. So we shouldn't be afraid of choice. The whole bhakti process in the beginning is about building up our choice muscles, so to speak. So we thrive on choice. Especially when we're in good association, it's always easy to make the right choice. You basically choose according to how you're associated. If we have inspiring bhakti association, it's easy to choose the right thing. And the more we choose Krishna, the more attractive to Krishna we become. So the super soul is saying, do you want this? Do you remember you did this? Or do you want that? We shouldn't become intimidated. Oh, how long can I go on like this, choosing? Maybe there'll come a time when I'll choose wrongly and my whole bhakti career will be finished. And maybe I should just give up now. The choice opportunities are special, and they make us stronger. And you can see the result. When you make the right choice, you feel more attracted to Krishna. So Krishna knows what he's doing. This illusory energy for an advanced devotee is actually mercy. Maya as an illusion becomes Maya as mercy and that it drives you to Krishna. Like you're walking down the street and a little dog starts chasing at your heels, and so you start walking faster to get to, you get to your destination faster. So in the advanced stages of bhakti, Maya does a service by chasing you back to Krishna. The same Maya that intimidates you so much. How will I ever get out of material existence? How will I ever get over these anarthas I have? And, it seems hopeless. Maybe I should just give in now. The more you choose properly, the stronger you become. So the so-called crises are simply an opportunity to choose Krishna. And then, after a while, you know you're going to choose Krishna. And it gives you such a sense of real satisfaction and happiness. You know that you're going to choose Krishna. Of course, you're not proud that you think you're infallible, but if you're crying out to Krishna in dependency, obviously you're going to choose Krishna because you're crying out to him. We shouldn't feel that it's so hopeless that I got these things in my mind. Gosh, where did that come from? Your mind knocks on the door of your consciousness. What about this? Do you remember when you did that? Don't you want to do this now? Come on, it wasn't really so bad, was it? It was kind of good, huh? And you start shaking. Oh, no. It's an opportunity to choose Krishna. And the more you choose Krishna, the stronger you become. The bhakti process is not hopeless. It is full of the greatest hope that will you'll realize your hopes. But Krishna has his own timetable, and we have to learn to work with that. Bhakti is a personalized process. So what happens to one devotee may not happen to another devotee in terms of material obstacles. It may seem like other devotees are getting all the spiritual benefits and you're not getting them. Of course, each devotee always thinks that the other devotees are better, the other devotees are more fortunate. But sometimes you can kind of put yourself down in an improper way, thinking that, oh, everyone else gets the mercy, not me. Krishna will give us the intelligence to see how his care for his devotees begins from the moment they take shelter of him. Elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, it's stated that even a neophyte receives the personal care of Krishna. But you just don't see it. As you become more Krishna conscious, you are conscious more of how Krishna is arranging for you, even in your beginning stage. But in the beginning, you don't see it. Just like an old child doesn't know all the things that the parents are doing to maintain the child, to nourish the child. You know? But when you get older, if you have good parents, you begin to appreciate that, and you become grateful. But not when you're a little kid. A last point, we mentioned yesterday about various reactions. I've noticed guests who frequent our lounges and lofts and outreach centers, I've noticed the reactions they have to hearing about the illusory energy and realizing that they may be an illusion. They may be just lost in a shadow world full of echoes and mirages, which simply indicate that there is a real world somewhere else. So one reaction is resignation. Well, look, you know, I didn't make the world the way it is, you know, and everyone's acting in this way. What do you want out of me, you know? I know it's not the best thing, but this is the way the real world is, and you just got to go with that, you know? The kind of resignation. It's just, what can you do? Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it? But that's just the way life is in the big city, you know. So, it's not the best, but you just gotta work with the situation as it is and try to make the best of it. The resignation. And then there's the complete denial approach. Everything's fine. You want to see beauty, just think everything is beautiful, you'll see beauty. You want to feel happiness, just think happiness is everywhere. Love is everywhere. It's just all up to you and your mindset. Magical thinking. If you're walking down the street and you're thinking strawberry ice cream, and if you think about it powerfully enough, out of the blue someone will come up to you and say, would you like some strawberry ice cream? And that happened to you? Maybe it hasn't happened to you? You're not tuned in. You just haven't come to that level yet. So this is the denial approach. It's everything's fine. Everything is just beautiful. What is the problem? And then the reaction that I mentioned, which got the, I felt the greatest emotional impact from the audience, was the defiance approach. I was shocked. Look, all right, so what if it's an illusion? I don't care. I'm going to enjoy it anyway. It may all be a dream. It doesn't matter. I'll show my individual worth by just going on, even though it's all an illusion. I'll just get what I need to get and want to get. Never mind that it's all a cosmic phantasmagoria. I'll show my worth by just enjoying myself anyway, even though it's all illusion. What do you say about that? So when I mention that, I can feel the hearts just resonate. Yeah, that's real valor. Maybe I'm not like that completely, but it seems to have some value. You're a hero in that way. You know it's pointless, but still you're going to go out and enjoy it. This is the defiant approach. So I was shocked how many persons can see, they can resonate to some degree with that defiance, as if it's like the symptom of a real human being. Even if you know it's illusion, so what? Just go out and do what you got to do. Try to enjoy anyway. That shows how great you are. So again, it may seem impossible dealing with all these different types. But remember, Srila Prabhupada also had that reaction. This is impossible. How are these people ever going to be Krishna conscious? He said, I have complete faith in hearing about Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was he was quite something. He sent a few disciples to London, and he was corresponding with them. He wrote one letter saying that just go on endeavoring. You won't see the results of your efforts for 100 years. Can you imagine? Just go on sanctifying your body. You won't see the results of your endeavor for 100 years. And if you read Prabhupada's letters and instructions, and maybe the honor tips of the devotees who first went out to open centers, it was always that you just call out to Krishna. People may come, they may not come, but you try to please Krishna by your endeavors. Now there's another extreme. Absolutism, that we don't have to worry about presentation, we don't have to worry about any finesse, we don't have to worry about any sensitivity, because we just give them the holy name, we just give them Srimad Bhagavatam, and never mind about any packaging, never mind about any taking any pains to, so that they'll assimilate. Go out on Hari Nam with mismatched socks. Wake up your neighbors at 4:30 in the morning with a thunderous kirtan, and if they protest, what do you say?
They're in Maya.
Right. The potency is a holy name. The demons are protesting. So that's another extreme. We are concerned about presentation. We are concerned about giving the medicine. But the presentation involves giving the medicine. We may package it this way and that way. We manage the situation this way and that way. But we do deliver the goods. One definition of management. They said, management means to create an interest in Krishna where there is none. That's management. Where was I speaking? I can't remember. I was in Dallas, Texas. last week. Did any of you remember Mapo cereal?
No.
Yes. Remember the Marky Mapo commercials? Marky Mapo was a little boy, and he wouldn't eat his Mapo. And so his mother had to go through so many intricacies to get him to eat the Mapo. So first she would try to give it to him straight on a spoon. Okay, Marky, here it is, Mapo. Loaded with nutrition, loaded with, this is just stick the spoon in his mouth and Mark, he can just slam his mouth shut. So then his mother would go through various intricate patterns. She'd take the spoon and put twirl around her head. Here it is, Marky, loaded with nutrition, loaded with value. And then after an intricate maneuver, maple! And Marky would just slam his mouth shut. So finally, the mother came up with some winning managemental arrangement where she could bring the spoon of Mapo to Marky's mouth, and Marky Mapo would open and take the Mapo. But she's delivering the Mapo. But she tried straight, but Marky wouldn't open his mouth. So she went through various other maneuvers to deliver the Mapo. So often, outreach is like that. Dinner with Marky Mapo. Speaking very bluntly, in Chicago, Srila Prabhupada once said that devotees asked him, if people refuse to engage in Krishna service, they refuse to take a book, in some way they repudiate or they don't take to our preaching, is it our fault? And Prabhupada replied that it's always their fault unless you unnecessarily make them angry and they go away without doing any service. They go away without making any fulfilling any opportunity to serve Krishna. They're just angry and mad. It's always their fault unless you unnecessarily enrage them. So then he explained further that they are snakes, but you have to be an expert snake charmer. I took that to mean that it's a whole career development in bhakti, how to give the medicine, and indeed give the medicine, but in a way that people will assimilate, but still the medicine has to be there. Another example, I was discussing this in Mumbai with some Gaur brothers. Discussing various issues. I remember a letter that Prabhupada wrote to the New York temple, because at that time the devotees were going out selling books and collecting money based on feeding people in Bangladesh. I remember some of my godfathers going on the trains in New York City and just making an announcement. We're collecting for Bangladesh. The people are dropping like flies, even though the humans, please, give something to feed the starving people. So this got back to Prabhupada, and he wrote a very deep letter to the New York temple. He said, it's true that everything belongs to Krishna, and that you can say any damn thing, because everything is Christian's property, and they are thieves, and so you can say anything. And he gave an example of how devotees collecting for Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would sometimes make up stories that Abhu Maharaj is living in the forest on just a few Tulsi leaves. Please give something. So, Prabhupada started out like that. Then he's qualified. He started on the absolute platform, then qualified. He said, the problem with this saying anything is that, first of all, neophytes may become disturbed because they're not abreast with the transcendental reality. They may feel disturbed due to ordinary morality. And secondly, we are a preaching organization operating within the material world. So if we act in a certain way that compromises our preaching, that's not good. Then he went further that, all right, you're saying so many things to sell the books, but I'm convinced there's enough value in our books that people will be impressed just because Krishna's all attractive. I think there's enough attractiveness in our book that if you just present Krishna as he is in the books, that is the best selling policy. But then ever the realist Prabhupada pointed out, in the next line he said, but that is a long and gradual art. And finally he ends the letter, in the meantime, don't reduce your BBT submissions. So how do you put all that together? We were discussing in Mumbai, some sannyasi godfathers, and we could see that Prabhupada was recognizing our youthful enthusiasm, and he also wanted to make a transcendental point about how you could say anything. At the same time, he's cautioning us, probably, look, this is a preaching organization, you have to be careful about your reputation. Devotees are not all advanced, they may react to apparent violations of morality. So you're acting in a certain way now, but there is a better way. And Prabhupada was very strong that in my books, you can just say what they are. There's enough attractiveness there because Krishna's all attractive, but he conceded it's a long and gradual art. So we were discussing, these senior devotees, that we, as older devotees, have to demonstrate that long and gradual process. Otherwise, younger devotees will have not an example to follow. We're not young devotees anymore, many of us. And so we have to lay down the clear path that indeed Krishna is all attractive. Otherwise, if we don't do it, who will? All right, it's a long and gradual process. But we've been around for quite a few decades, many of us four decades. So we have to demonstrate that that's the road to trial. And Prabhupada said it's the best road. But he conceded it's a long and gradual process. All right, it may be a lifetime mission, but what else is life meant for? And then, ever the pragmatic, he concluded by saying, okay, in the meantime, don't reduce your BBT submissions. The temples in India that have to be built, so on and so forth. So he gave a whole panorama of pragmatics, the way things should be going, how we should be developing, how we should grow, and take an acknowledgement of everyone's contingencies, but saying it's not the best thing, and certainly in some ways you'll get in trouble by doing that. But he stayed off the mundane morality platform. Everything belongs to Krishna. He made that clear from the very beginning. But you have to take into account these factors in terms of public's perception, devotees' perception, and your own spiritual development. So always remember that letter. A long and gradual art. It's the best, but it's long and gradual. So we were discussing in Mumbai how our senior Vaishnavas, Vaishnavis, need to demonstrate that the fruits of that long and gradual art without going to the absolutist extreme. Just walk up to someone and here it is, the absolute truth. At the same time, you still have to deliver the MAPO. So this is intelligence and this is management. How to create an interest in Krishna where there is none. A very fascinating definition of management given by Srila Prabhupada. So this was our conclusion. The older devotees and those who want to be older devotees have to set that example of some or other figuring out how to get the MAPO in the mouth. But you have to get, it's MAPO on the spoon now. You don't just have to get it in the mouth. And it may take a while to figure out, but the constant effort to strive in that way attracts Krishna's attention. You can get away with certain things as a young devotee, but young devotees, hopefully they'll become older devotees. And the way you become an older devotee is confidence in Krishna, following Prabhupada's footsteps. How are these people ever going to become Krishna conscious? It's impossible. But I know that if they can hear Srimad Bhagavatam, that will cleanse all the dirty things in their heart. It will be possible. Okay, how to arrange that people hear Srimad Bhagavatam? Well, there's so much room for creativity in that. There's so much room for hospitality. There's so much room for personal sensitivity according to time and place. But the MAPO is on the spoon. It's got to go in the mouth. Maybe not today, but tomorrow. So in this way, preaching is such an extraordinary activity, and it absorbs our best intelligence. It absorbs our emotions, trying to satisfy the parampara in this way. Any questions, comments? Yes.
I have one thought. Earlier you mentioned about how we have this choice, you know, and that choice is always there. It becomes easier if you're making the right choice. I was thinking that isn't it true that sometimes the choice is not so clearly Krishna or Maya, but it's you're choosing. Say it's becoming Krishna conscious, you're choosing something that will help you to be Krishna conscious. Like someone comes to the temple, they're not just, oh, all right, I'm surrendering to Krishna. You know, oh, let me check out, you know, I like the incense, and I like the prasadam, and they have some nice guys there, you know, or something. In other words, that's the choice. And that's also part of the art of preaching, where you give people a chance to make a choice that they don't really know is leading them to ultimate surrender, and, rejecting everything they thought was important, but it's pulling them on the strings rather than pulling them in. Isn't that the idea? But the choice is still there, but it's not so radical a choice.
I'll give you an example of something that I arrange for. Outreach centers that I personally supervised, we have yoga classes going on simultaneously in another room with a Bhagavad Gita class. And so what happens is that people are coming for yoga, due to attraction to the yoga teacher, they start asking, questions, what's going on in that other room? And they also see it on the agenda, they see it on the schedule. What's this Gita Mysteries, what's that all about? And so the choice is always there. And their curiosity gets aroused sooner or later. If they just want to be diehard yogis, well then, they pay the price. They help support the center. But simultaneously, there's always something else going on. Of course, we have big enough places to do that.
There's also a flip side to that.
Mm-hmm.
You're going along as a devotee. You're mm-hmm. not yet achieved the goal of pure prema bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
But you got your routine going, and mm-hmm. but then you start to let a little Maya creep in, but you're not thinking, oh, now I'm rejecting Krishna and I'm choosing Maya. It just seems like something that could even look like Krishna consciousness. Somewhat, you know what I mean? But it's really beginning to take you into the association of the modes that, you know, they actually pull you away.
Yes, that's why we all require association. That's why I hail you. Yes, it's, Maya is very tricky. And it's not a hopeless situation dealing with Maya, but we have to take proper precautions. And the greatest precaution I found is the association of dedicated devotees, dedicated to Srila Prabhupada's pleasure. We have to have a healthy respect of the industry energy. It can make up look down and down look up. That also happens in Goka Vrindavan, though. When Krishna was leaving for Mathura, they presented, look, for you, just because of you, our friends have become enemies, and our enemies have become friends. In other words, our husbands and family members are supposed to be our friends, but we rejected them like enemies just for the sake of you. And rival consorts like Chandravali and her party, they're supposed to be our enemies, but actually in the overall scheme of the Leela, they actually enhance, the rivalry accomplishment enhances everyone's transcendental rasa. So that way our enemies have become friends. And our homes have become the forest, and the forest has become our home. In that instead of living at home, we're living in the forest. And our homes, our houses have actually become forests because we've given them up to live for our home in the forest. So in that way, we're presenting all these different contradictions to Krishna. All because of you, this is what's going on. Anything else? But we might, we have the words of wisdom.
I have a question, but I'm looking at the time and thinking what devotees have to do.
Okay. All right. I understand.